is not like TV, only better.
Television! Teacher! Mother!
Secret lover.
What, that's it? That's your movie?
Well, I said that I had an idea for a movie.
Hey there, folks. This is Screen Watching. My name's Dan Barra. I'm joined by a man that I believe, and I've gone through the union rules on this, I believe he has to be referred to as a TV funny man. It's Mark Humphreys.
Oh, Dan Barrett, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for the fine work you do with the Always Be Watching newsletter.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. That is, of course, a stipulation of anyone who comes onto the podcast. They must say at least one polite thing about my newsletter at the beginning, but also at the end.
Okay, I'll save my observations about your Doctor Who jokes for the end.
Yeah, if you
could. I was very pleased. I got a name check the other day in the newsletter. M. Humphreys, that was me, for eagle-eyed observers. Yeah.
I was trying to be polite. I didn't want people understanding how many famed celebrities read my newsletter. It's just kind of, it's embarrassing for them. It's embarrassing for me.
That's it. You had one the other day from a B. Affleck, a K. Grammer. It was a lot. Yeah, you've got a lot of big friends.
K. Grammer actually writes most of the newsletters these days.
That's it. Yeah. Frasier, I'm very interested to... I never got into Frasier, to be honest, the original Frasier. I tried to give it a proper go, and it just didn't, I don't know. It's never.
Were you
never
ever a Cheers guy at all?
Cheers just came at the wrong time, I think, because, I mean...
In that you weren't born yet?
It predated me, and then by the time I was old enough to watch it, I think I was watching Murphy Brown and Golden Girls and Cosby Show. Can't say the Cosby Show these days, of course, but it was what I was watching.
So right as Hannibal Buress got on stage and started bringing down Bill Cosby, which really started the beginning of the fall of Cosby, I was doing a Cosby Show rewatch, and I was like in the middle of third season, I think, and I just couldn't continue. It really ruined it.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm the real victim in this.
I had the box set on DVD. You think I'm putting those on in the machine? No, I'll never see those things again. Anyway, let's not go down that path.
Yeah, I want you to be TV's cancelled funny man, Mark Humphreys.
Yeah, well, you know, I think. if I'm gonna do anything career damaging, I think now's the time. Now that I'm, for the moment, not immediately employed at the national broadcaster, I can be a bit looser, maybe.
So what do you really think about the
constant
Australia?
I can talk about the constant interference from Ida Buttrose in Gardening Australia is what has really damaged that show. And the right-wing influence is very clear.
There's recently been a brand extension of Gardening Australia, which I want to say is called Gardening Australia Kids. So I found myself watching a fair bit of ABC Kids these days, and I keep seeing ads for it. And then eventually I saw the program. In the opening minutes, it's Costa, the gardener in the program, talking to two young kids, and they were talking about pineapple on pizza. And these kids were adamant about how pineapple does not belong on a pizza. And at that point, I stood up, I turned off the TV, I looked at my child and said, "This is not appropriate viewing for you," and we've not watched the ABC since.
Yeah, fair enough. It's fake news. No, pineapple is fine on pizza. I was for a long time against pineapple on pizza, but it was a theoretical objection. I then had pineapple on pizza, and I had to accept that it is perfectly fine. I can't remember where or how I saw this, and I feel like I'm telling tales out of school here, but I was shown a script from Gardening Australia, and what is extraordinary is that their scripts are written as film scripts. So it says exterior garden. As if it would be anywhere else. Yeah, it's laid out. It was just fascinating to see it laid out in a sort of final draft format.
That's incredible. Yeah, I want to get my hands now on a Gardening Australia script.
They'd be worth a lot, I reckon, yeah. There's only 30,000 of them.
What's your favorite episode? Okay, so look, we can talk about Gardening Australia Raw podcast, which I'm fully in down for it, but... I thought maybe we'd stick to a very loose format, and boy, is this loose. Usually on the show, we open with some reviews of the things of the week. I'm going to talk about a program that's debuting this week. Mark's just going to pull out something which people should just be watching. And I know what he's going to talk about. I endorse this program. So we're going to talk about that. But then afterwards, we're going to have a bit of a broader chat talking about, and you mentioned Frasier earlier. That's actually part of the inspiration for this chat. It dawns on me that we're in this period at the moment where TV and movie comedy has changed quite dramatically in the last, I don't know, say 10 years. And what we want from it's a little bit different. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about some of the different types of comedy and how we think it's changed and is that ever coming back or whatever. So loose chatter, we'll have that later on in the chat.
It stinks.
This week on the show, I'm going to talk about admittedly one of my favorite programs. It's on Amazon Prime Video. It's called Upload.
What a gorgeous day.
You're gorgeous.
Schwing.
Oh, don't stop on my account. Counting all
different ideas drifting away. Did you guys hook up? Was it everything you thought it would be? She seems like a bit of a pillow princess.
Let's just say we had an amazing connection.
How long have you been downloaded?
26 days.
So what are you doing here?
Rayon killed hundreds of innocent people.
We're gonna break in and shut it down.
I have a plan.
Promise me you won't say anything. The more people that know about it, the more dangerous it is.
No. He's nowhere in the system. So I rebooted him from a backup copy.
There is another you living in Lakeview.
You think this is identity theft?
Upload, it's in its third season now. This is a program which, admittedly, I thought nobody was watching. I thought it was just me. I thought this is one of these shows where I've been shouting at people for a couple of years, watch this program, and that nobody had listened to me. And that, you know, eventually the show would just be cancelled and I'd still just be shouting about this program into a void. But interview this morning from the creator of the program, Greg Daniels, who's also the guy that made The US Office. He's talking about how it's the most popular half-hour show on Amazon Prime Video. And admittedly, I don't think there's that many half-hour programs en masse on the platform, so it might be a bit of sort of faint praise, but it suggests maybe people are watching it. Anyway, Mark, have you seen Upload?
I have not seen Upload, but I wish it well. And all I know about Upload is really what I've learned from you from reading your newsletter, because I was startled to read this morning, yes, that it seems to be getting viewing numbers on Prime, but there seems to be very little chatter about it. And it reminded me of a quote from a Robin Williams movie called Man of the Year, which I may have even quoted it on this podcast before, because I just think it's such a perfect line. Where in that film, Robin Williams is running, he's a comedian who's running for president back when that seemed like a ridiculous idea. He's talking about trying to understand the average American. And this, and he's talking to someone about TV ratings. And he says, you know how they say that JAG is the most watched show in America? But have you ever had someone come up to you and say, hey, did you see JAG last night? And I just thought that was such a perfect observation. It's like, for years we were told that JAG was the most watched show, but you never had a conversation about JAG. It just never came.
Counterpoint to that, in, let's say, 1993, 94, the world's most popular show was Baywatch. And Baywatch. I know I went to school every week and we talked about Baywatch quite a fair bit. It seems unlikely a group of teenage boys aged between, you know, about 13 to 15 would be interested in talking about Baywatch, but somehow it happened.
Do you remember there was a show? There was a show that used to be on the comedy. So I had OzStar for a brief period when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
My dad was a weather presenter on OzStar, and so we had the Comedy Channel. And this is when the Comedy Channel had a lot of material which you wouldn't really classify as comedy. It was really just quite racy. Like Naked News was a show that was on the Comedy Channel.
They went too far when they introduced the male version of that one.
They did. That's where I draw the line. Mm. Exactly right. Before that, it was
I don't know how your father felt about it, but
I never asked. But
as a broadcaster,
Well, no, I mean, he often presented the weather in the nude as well. But but there was Naked News, and then there was something called the Cindy Margolis show, and I remember that used to be promoted as Cindy Margolis was the most downloaded woman on the planet. And you just had to take them at their word. I didn't know who Cindy Margolis was. I don't know what she's doing today, but for one brief shining moment, apparently she was the most downloaded woman in the world. So she was.
Why would
she was JAG?
She was Jag.
Exactly. So, okay, yeah, Upload. So, the other thing I know about Upload, I'll just say quickly,
yeah,
the Australian connection, Casey Anning, who directed, I think, a few episodes. Most recently, she had Class of 07 was her show, and I got to work with her on a podcast, scripted audio series for Audible called Riot Act. So anyway, just a shout out to Casey Anning, who is brilliant, and I wish her well.
And shout out to Riot Act. I listened to the whole thing. It was pretty good.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. I regularly use the phrase ball tower when I was talking about the Australian media now.
Oh, good. Well, there you go. That's, well, you definitely did listen. That's proof.
There's only got to be one person out there. So, look, Upload, the premise of this one is you've got this tech bro by the name of Nathan, played by Robbie Amell, who's the brother of the dude that played Arrow on TV, both of them very chiseled. He's the main guy, and this is part of my problem with it, which is that chiseled people can't be funny. I mean, they keep on trying to make John Cena happen, and I just won't buy into it, quite frankly, but you know, this is neither here nor there.
I don't mind John Cena. I think maybe I saw him host an episode of SNL, and I went, "Oh, this guy can do it." I haven't watched a great deal, but I remember thinking quite positively about John Cena. So I'm pro Cena. I'm pro Cena.
For the record, I'm also pro Cena, but also ethically, I just can't embrace someone who's that chiseled.
It's hard to embrace it, exactly. Like if if Ron Moss was really funny, that would be a problem, because he's obviously the most chiseled man on the planet. And
present company, obviously.
No, please, of course, thank you. Yeah. I refuse to watch Bold and the Beautiful until Ron Moss returns. I don't accept the idea that there's a new Ridge Forrester. I don't care how many years he's been in there.
Okay, so look, you've got this dude. We really have. Focus, guys.
Upload.
So this guy is a tech bro. He finds himself in a car accident, dies, where it doesn't really say how many years in the future we are from now. Let's say it's 10. It doesn't really matter. But we're in a world which is technologically a little bit more advanced than we are. But certainly, as that technological advancement has taken place, it also means that the crass commercialism and just awful trends that we've all seen as we've all embraced online in all the good and bad ways of it have just been amplified. So what it means, this guy, he's died, but within this world, they've been able to take his consciousness and upload it to the cloud. So in the cloud, if you've got money, you can live in a fairly fancy place, and it's like a resort to live in for the rest of eternity. And then as your various family members all pass on, they can join you at that resort, or you can travel elsewhere, and it's a playground for the rich. As you start sort of, first couple of episodes of the show, you kind of see the show for what it is, but then they start really playing around with the haves and haves nots, the 1% sort of nature of what they're really dealing with here. And you see what life's like for people that can't afford to necessarily have the optimum experience in the afterlife, and the poor people that have been given the ability to have 1% of the weak consciousness, because that's all their plan will afford. So you've got like that kind of element taking place. But as the second season happened, you begin to realize there's actually other plans afoot by the wealthy upper elite who are trying to influence American elections from the afterlife to give people who are dead now the chance to vote. Okay. And you realize this is really just a way for wealthy people to just further entrench themselves as the leaders of society and the, you know, the people that wield the power and just further embed themselves into that. So you kind of see that happening. And so it's about this guy who's been uploaded in there, finds out that he was killed. It was a murder. It wasn't actually just an inadvertent car accident. So there's a bit of conspiracy thing going on. There's a bit of a love story where he falls in love with one of the handlers that exists on the platform, who travel between the real world and the fantasy space to, you know, provide support to anyone. And so it's kind of like they're guardian angels. They just sort of crop in, help them, see if they need anything, whatever. So they've got that. She falls in love with him. And in the current season, he's downloaded himself into a new body. And so he's actually back on Earth hanging around. And that looks like it's not long for the show, but I don't want to spoil too much there. We're in this third season, and the difficulty is this is a show which is hard to talk about because it starts out being one thing and just starts getting more and more complicated as the show goes in. It's a really interesting program. Is it a funny program? And I'm not so sure that it is. It's very broad and very... it's broad. It's over the top and very silly at times. And I don't think any of those jokes work at all. But when it's talking about like the sci-fi conceits and how that plugs into the current sort of zeitgeist nature where we are all sort of questioning authority in a way that I don't think people really were 10, 15 years ago. When it's doing that, the show is incredibly interesting and the cast are all very charismatic and carry you through these elements of the program. It's just not funny. And I don't know if that's a problem for the show, but it just means tonally it's a very strange program. I love it, but also it's kind of unwatchable.
That's extraordinary. That's both ends of the spectrum there. I mean, what really, what do we find funny at the moment? I feel like the only thing that sort of was in my circles, the only sort of general agreement is that I think you should leave is funny. That's the kind of consensus view that Tim Robinson has hit the nail on the head there. I've had a lot of people talk up Jury Duty. I watched the first 1.5 episodes of Jury Duty. I'll go back to it because people I respect have really raved about it, but it didn't.
Yeah,
quite
I'm kind of the same. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I say this as someone who's supposed to work in the field of comedy. I don't know what's funny anymore. I think, because obviously my background is more to do with sort of sketch comedy, particularly in this political space. And I just feel like I don't even see, like, what was the last SNL sketch that you saw? Like, what was the last SNL sketch that went viral? Like, occasionally I'll see, it'll be like, oh, Dave Chappelle did a monologue. You should watch that. Or Pete Davidson did a thing about Israel and Palestine, what have you. And, you know, and obviously that's not the richest of comedic territory. I feel like most of the sort of comedy I see now is if I'm on TikTok and it's old sketches of Key and Peele or like TikTokers just doing individual character work, sending up, family members.
Okay, so the plan was we were going to have this conversation a bit further on the podcast, but you've opened the can of worms. So let's do this now, and we'll jump at the end. No format, we don't care about this. We'll talk about this, and we'll talk about your program at the end from. But what kind of got me really thinking about this a couple of days ago was I started listening to Craig Ferguson has started doing a podcast. He had on recently Lewis Black, very sort of angry comedian that used to appear on The Daily Show a fair bit. And there was a time where they were both talking about the opportunity to do stand-up specials on Netflix. Neither of them have been given Netflix offers in recent years to do it because Netflix are after different types of comedians, younger comedians, more diverse comedians, and both of them are of the opinion that that's fine. Like, they're perfectly happy for other comedians to finally get that chance. But they were both talking about YouTube and how they're actually fairly happy that there's the opportunity for them to release their comedy through YouTube because they feel that there's an audience that are probably a bit more receptive there and that the traditional barriers are breaking down where, yes, Netflix have a lot of money to throw at comedians like that, but really the audience are on these platforms like YouTube, and if you want to connect with an audience and use that as a method by which to sell more tickets, like, that's open to you. And Ferguson said the most interesting thing, which was that he's finding that his audience is getting younger and younger recently. And I think that's because his old late night show, the Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson, is available on YouTube broadly. Not like legally, but it's just been illicitly uploaded. I think kids are finding that. Younger people are finding that and are now just turning up to his shows because it's just as relevant today as the silly jokes were back in 2014 when the show was on the air.
It's curious, like, this, it's because everything, because we've all got our algorithms now, it's hard to get a sense of really of what's hitting. And I wasn't aware of Mr. Beast for a long time, and then suddenly I read something and then you realize,
are you a YouTube guy?
But
because it's not even algorithms. But like, it's not even algorithms, it's platforms and algorithms. So, I mean, I'm not really a YouTube guy, and I feel like I've got the same Mr. Beast distance as you do, okay? But, like, he's meaningful to a lot of people, but I'm just not on that right platform to see it. Yes, whereas I think I'm probably more of a traditional consumer. I'm watching things on, you know, higher-end streaming services where I'm sort of paying money for it, but maybe I'm missing out on stuff. Like, this is the big dilemma I have right now.
Yeah, I never just open YouTube. I'm conscious of a lot of people, and I think it's especially true of kids as well, but a lot of people who just watch YouTube. I don't watch YouTube. If you send me a YouTube link, I'll watch that video on YouTube, and then I might go down the YouTube hole. But there's never a moment where, like, because I'll open up my apps, I'll open up Binge or Stan or what have you and see what's new and flick through there. But there's no scenario in which I open up YouTube and go, surprise me. I have to have been directed there by a link from someone, and then I can go down that Norm Macdonald Live rabbit hole or whatever. So in my head, Norm Macdonald Live is still like, that's what everyone's watching, because that's what I'm watching. But I have no sense of, I've got friends who listen to comedy podcasts, and they talk about people who have, you know, a million subscribers, and I've never heard of them. It's just, I'm endlessly fascinated by these people who are objectively massively popular, and yet to me, they're just made up names.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, this podcast does at least 1.2 million podcasts a week, but like, people don't know the podcast for some reason. Like, the algorithm truly against me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, so look, there's a couple of things that sort of spawned this. So one, it was listening to Craig Ferguson the other night, but also, and this is a Craigie Ferg related thing, there was a writer's strike, came to an end, meant that all the late night show hosts could get back to it. And I'm someone who, and I kind of feel that you're probably on a very similar sort of trajectory in your life, where watch a lot of Letterman through the 90s, yes. Often recorded at like 3 o'clock in the morning on Channel 9. Watched a lot of that, get around to watching Daily Show and the Colbert Report, you know, that sort of thing. Like, you know, viewing change, maybe watched a fair bit of Conan. Like, I know I certainly watched a lot of Conan.
On All-Star, we had Leno. And Conan. I did the Leno back-to-back. Yeah. You know, my dad loved Leno. I loved Conan, but we watched both of them together. But yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So watched a lot of this type of content. I got really frustrated when Jimmy Fallon took over the Tonight Show, because suddenly it became a bit more about like the various stunts and games they were playing and the sketches. And that wasn't really for me. It got away from the heart of like the integrity of the Tonight Show, which is monologue, people sit on a couch and talk to each other.
Yeah.
Writer strike happens, and suddenly we've got no late night shows on for, it was about 120, 130 days, something like that. I started listening to the podcast where they're all talking about, you know, being late night show hosts, and it was a fairly funny, warm, engaging podcast. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to watch some Seth Meyers. I've never really watched much Seth Meyers, but I find him really engaging on this podcast. I sat down on the night that all the late night shows came back. I watched Seth Meyers and thought, you know what? This isn't very good. And it really highlighted what the problem is with these late night shows, which is that format that I so revered doesn't make sense in 2023 anymore, where, you know, host comes out and tells the same jokes that everybody's already been saying for the last 3 days on Twitter or whatever your platforms of choice are. It just sort of seemed like regurgitation of material. Like, it's just a bit sort of hacky in delivery. Like, none of the format's elements have really evolved or changed much. Like, the presentation style was still largely the same as they've been doing for years and years. And I thought, well, maybe Seth Meyers isn't really what I'm looking for anymore. So I watched Jimmy Kimmel, and Jimmy Kimmel I always find a bit sort of hit and miss. Really like him, but the show just doesn't really quite work for me. And the show just didn't work for me at all. I got back to Colbert, where I watch a lot of Colbert, and I just couldn't watch anymore. It just kind of feels like this 3-month gap for me now is just being kind of like the severing of the line for me. I just can't find anything in that format anymore.
The Seth Meyers is an interesting example, because I, just before we recorded this, I decided, oh, something that I used to love watching during the 2016 US election was A Closer Look. This segment, yep, which Seth and his team did such a brilliant job, especially during that period, to break down what was happening in that election, the Trump-Clinton election, and it was really sharp, and the jokes were very funny, and it was very informative, and I thought it was brilliant. I would watch that religiously, and then I sort of, I don't know, once Trump was in power or something, it just didn't feel, I don't know, I felt like, well, we just had to accept that this is going to be 4 years of just chaos. And so I didn't give it another go. I just watched my first one for the first time in, yes, perhaps 7 years. I couldn't believe how bad it was. And it had flashes of decent jokes. But broadly speaking, it was so weak. And I just thought, oh, man, the writing is just not there. And Seth's having to do a lot of heavy lifting of kind of doing character voices and trying to riff off things where there weren't enough punchlines. And I, again, to bring up Norm Macdonald, I mean, that was when he was doing Weekend Update on SNL in the mid-90s. Like, it was a golden age for setup punchline comedy and to do with the news. And I don't know. I'm just so rarely, I can quote a dozen Norm jokes about Michael Jackson or OJ, but I couldn't tell you what Jimmy or James or Stephen or Seth have said in the last few years about anything. I want some quotable jokes. I want a line that you can go and say. I feel like you used to be able to go to school or work the next day and quote a joke to someone. But anyway, that's my complaint. Not quotable enough.
I mean, this is part of the problem. I mean, not quotable enough, I think it's perfectly reasonable. I don't think you can go to the schoolyard anymore. And first of all, you shouldn't, because that's just weird and creepy. The other element would be that everyone's on their own different platforms now. I just don't think that necessarily people know or like enough people watching the same thing at the same time to be able to get the reference. I just don't think that happens. Writing just seems weak.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's a broader issue that I'm sure you've had many conversations with people about, is just that there's no water cooler. Very few shows have that general, you know, even something like White Lotus, which I feel like a whole chunk of people watched. I didn't watch it, so I wasn't part of that conversation. Like, I still think I'm always fascinated to talk to people about what they're watching, and I'm endlessly amazed that there is almost never any overlap with what I'm watching. And I'm amazed by how often they will say a show that I have never heard of. And that fascinates me, because out there are people whose lives are devoted to making, you know, I can't even name the shows, but there are people, their whole lives are devoted to making, you know, the remake of Charmed, for want of a better example.
Of all the shows, you pick Charmed.
I was just reaching. Just couldn't think of a name of a show. I'm always amazed by that. There's people's lives are dedicated to making these shows that you and I will never, ever watch. Not one frame of it will touch our eyes.
Well, it's always like you look at the Netflix most watched charts and you'll see shows like Virgin River. Now, Virgin River, that's not a show that's made for me, and that's fine. Like, that's perfectly cool. But it just sort of strikes me that there's all these shows that aren't part of the conversation anywhere at all, really. Mm-hmm. But they're so widely viewed. It's just baffling to me.
Yes. Yeah. No, exactly. I know. And I have no idea what the business model are for these shows. I don't know how anyone's making any money. Because I just feel like surely there aren't enough viewers for all these shows that are being made. I think the whole thing feels like some sort of pyramid scheme or something. I think it's all about to go. I think TV is a bubble. It's about to burst, surely.
Yeah. No, I think that's exactly. I think it already burst. I think we're just sort of, yet
to see the consequence. How does anyone crew a show? How do shows get crewed in America? There can't be that many crew members. It takes so many crew members to make anything.
This is one of the things that's coming up in Australia right now, where there's a lot of movement to try to get the streamers to be legally required to produce so much Australian content locally. But a lot of the local networks don't want this to happen, because as soon as that happens, they're going to be competing for crew all over the place. Mm. They're going to be competing for soundstage space. And so things are going to get hugely expensive in Australia to be able to cope with what will be a relatively small influx of content coming through. Anyway, just a side thought. I was going to say, Frasier is probably another indication of the way that comedy's changed in recent years, where you look at sitcoms, the last one to really be on the air that anyone's really paying attention to was probably The Big Bang Theory, which wound down like 5 or 6 years ago now. I think Kaley Cuoco has been in like 7 different programs since then. But you've got that, like, nobody's really watched a sitcom since Big Bang Theory, and suddenly Frasier's come back, and it's like a 1990s sitcom, like it's been in amber, and I've just kind of, you know, Jurassic Parked it and brought it back into life. Like, it feels weird. Like, there's a laugh track. It's all the comedic beats are exactly the same as a 90s era sitcom. And it feels like such an anachronism. And I kind of wonder, like, are audiences there for it? Like, do we still have the language to be able to watch a new version of one of those shows? Or is our expectation of new comedy that it doesn't have a laugh track? We can watch things of, you know, yesteryear and appreciate it for what it was. But can we watch new things that try to embrace that format? And having seen 5 episodes of Frasier, which I quite liked, I kind of feel I'm going to be alone on that one. I don't think a lot of audiences are going to take to it because it feels weird.
Well, this is interesting because where I got name-checked in the newsletter last week was to do with Frasier, because you were talking about just how the sort of richness of the character in terms of how it is, you know, it's been on, that character has existed across multiple shows since the late 80s. And I was talking about how I messaged you about Alan Partridge and how rich that character is and how many different forms that character has existed across sitcoms and radio shows and podcasts and books and a film and stage shows and various other things. And I think part of the success of that is that the writers have gone out of their way to Alan is always Alan, but they keep putting him in a different medium, or they're giving him sort of, they're making enough changes by making most recently a podcast. So what is Alan like when he's hosting a podcast? What is Alan, you know, with this time, what is Alan like when he's hosting a magazine style show? His latest book is called Big Beacon. What is Alan like if he's telling a dual narrative memoir? So that's part of the genius of that solution, is to not try and keep doing the same thing. Keep some things the same, keep the character the same, but keep putting them in different situations and specifically different mediums. I think to try and just keep putting Frasier into other versions of a 3-camera sitcom is, there's a ceiling to that, I think, creatively.
I mean, I think that's definitely true. I think there is a ceiling to it creatively, but there's something that sort of, I don't think I'm coming to Frasier necessarily to see the sort of latest sort of cutting edge approach to how you tell a Frasier Crane story. I think the warmth and familiarity is very much sort of what you're offering here. So it's Frasier, exact same format and style program, but just dropped into different scenarios each time through. And so to me, that kind of works because they're updating. You're seeing how Frasier is interacting in 2023 versus how we saw him operate in the 90s. Like, there is something weirdly interesting about seeing this progression through. And it's notable on this one because they've jumped the story ahead. Like, they haven't been into Frasier's story since like 2004. So we were kind of like part of Frasier's life since like 1985, 86 through to like 2004. So like, that's, you know, 20 years of Frasier Crane we were really seeing on TV. And then suddenly there's a massive gap, and it's sort of, it's weird jumping in because it feels familiar, but also it feels like our friend's been hiding from us for about 15 years.
I thought another interesting example in this sort of space, which really didn't work, was, did you watch the Murphy Brown reboot?
Yeah, that show was awful.
Yeah, and so I have very fond memories of the original Murphy Brown. And Murphy Brown was a show which in its time generated headlines. Like, it really was, it became part of the news. It became part of even a presidential campaign. It was so much part of the zeitgeist. And it was so bizarre to then have it come back, yes, 20-odd years later and be so irrelevant and feel so stale. I mean, like, the Mad About You reboot didn't even I don't think anyone's even seen it, but yeah, sorry, go on.
I mean, I've seen two episodes of it, but it was a hard battle to be able to get across that. You can find the new Mad About You airing on the Canadian CTV app if you go hunting for that, but that's about the only place you'll find it anywhere. The problem with the Murphy Brown reboot was that I think Murphy is a very compelling character, and people want us to be reunited with her, but I don't think people want us to watch the 2023 version of what FYI had turned into, especially without Jim Dial. Like, nobody really wanted that. Instead, what we wanted to see was, what is Murphy Brown doing in 2023 and how is she holding power to account? I'd like to watch a scripted drama, or maybe just have some comedic elements through it and sort of see what Murphy looks like in that sort of a space. Lou Grant her in the way that they took Lou Grant out of the Mary Tyler Moore Show and made him a newspaper editor in a different city. So he was in Minnesota or in Mary Tyler Moore, brought him to Los Angeles in a drama. Like, that's a really interesting approach to character, because we want to see the character. We don't want to see the format.
Yeah. Yes. Agree.
Yeah. But yeah, Murphy Brown was definitely weird. Are there other elements of comedy that you think is a bit weird? Like, we've seen this rise of comedy podcasts and stand-up specials. But I was thinking about the idea that they seem to be driven very much by this sort of perceived audience demand for diversity and difference in voice and presentation in 2023 versus the same comedians that we saw years ago. So like that Craig Ferguson and I just forgot his name, Lewis Black conversation. Like, those are two people where 2007, 2008, like, would have been at the absolute top of the list of people you'd want to see on stage. But like in 2023, is that necessarily no longer the case? Or is it just that the audiences for them have gotten older and therefore maybe slightly less relevant culturally?
That's interesting. I think I sort of a tangent to that, just while I think of it, in a sort of attempt to answer that, is also what an audience expects from stand-ups these days seems to be shifting, because a lot of the clips of stand-ups that are going viral are crowd work. And what I know that a lot of comedians are becoming increasingly frustrated by is that the crowd work stuff often does really well online, but that's not really why they're doing stand-up. They're not really in it to do crowd work. They've got their set material that they've written and they've spent time on. And I've heard some comedians complain about how audiences now are changing. It's live stand-up audiences are changing because they've seen these viral crowd work moments. Audience members are getting increasingly loud and getting involved in the show, in live shows, inserting themselves into the show, hoping that they will then become part of some sort of viral moment. And so a comedian posted, and it was a piece of paper with that night's set. You know, where normally you would write the subjects that you're going to cover in your set, and the whole set was written out as, "What do you do for a living? Where are you from? Are you two dating? Are you?" And it was just like this acknowledgement that there's been a shift in expectations from certain audience members, that they're not necessarily there to see you actually do your prepared bits, unless you're like a Shane Gillis, for example, at the moment. For some of the other comedians, there's an expectation that you'll just do crowd work. But as for Craig Ferguson's audience and Lewis Black's, I'm guessing they're touring, I'm guessing they're pulling numbers, I don't know, but well, I'm not really.
This is the thing with both of them are still actively touring, and both of them are selling out venues and working quite successfully in that sort of upper mid-tier of stand-ups around the place, but you know, that's certainly not at the top sort of level by any means anymore. But, you know, that's selling out large-scale venues.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think, you know, yeah, but if you think about the sort of stand-up clips that you would see online, I don't know, like, it's all, to me, all the stuff that I see is people, like, 40 and under, you know. Occasionally a Louis C.K. clip will slip through, and we won't go down that path, but, yeah. I mean, I've never seen, like, I watch a lot of Curb Your Enthusiasm. I've never seen a Richard Lewis clip. You know, Richard Lewis has never come into my TikTok.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Richard Lewis isn't really getting around all that much anymore these days. He's got some issues.
He's looked old for a long time.
Yeah, he's looked on death's door for some time now. But, you know, I wish him well. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Is this going to be the final season of Curb? I think it is. But anyway,
yeah, that's a conversation like for another day. Yeah, I feel like Larry's getting old. Once Bob Einstein died, like Marty Funkhauser is not an essential part of the show, but he's pretty, I don't know. It's a little bit of like, you know, once when Phil Hartman died, there's lots of reasons why The Simpsons kind of dipped. But I think one of them was that you just lost that particular comedy note that The Simpsons used to be able to hit with Phil Hartman. And I feel like Curb is missing the Bob Einstein comedy note.
Yeah. It'd be wrong to refer to Einstein or Phil Hartman as being like the soul of the show, because they were never really quite that for either of those programs. But it's kind of like they're like a stomach muscle. And so it's hard to like sit up properly. Like it's just, something's not quite right there.
Yeah. I'd say they were one of the limbs. And, you know, it's hard to lose a limb.
Yeah, I guess that is my understanding. Yeah, I don't know. I keep on seeing like the sort of resurgence of these sorts of things that seems to be like the peak of comedy back when I was becoming sort of very interested in comedy. So late 90s through to like maybe late 2000s, like that was the time I came out to shine. And I don't know, like, I don't know if comedy is getting back there or if maybe just media is too fragmented these days for us to really sort of say there's one particular trend in comedy, but it kind of feels like everything I was watching, just like all that media is collapsing anyway. So maybe it's all for moose and I should try and find my laugh somewhere else if they even exist anymore. Can we be funny in this modern age? Who can say?
Yeah. And I don't think there are, I wouldn't, there's no noticeable trend to me in comedy. I think there's so much stuff being produced now that, you know, there's something out there for everyone. But in the process, it just means that we're not all going to be watching the same thing. And so we've lost that kind of, communal laugh. We're all laughing in corners.
Yeah. Look, I know the 7:30 report's less funny than it used to be.
Some would say it's funnier.
Okay, Mark. We completely just moved on from talking about From, and that's a shame because it's a really good show. Let's listen to a clip, and there we hear defense of the program shot afterwards.
Must have got knocked down in a storm or something.
It's a pretty selective storm.
What are they doing?
Can we just leave, please?
Jim!
I said defense earlier. We're not going to defend it. We're going to just prop it up because it's good TV. Mark, tell us about From.
Well, that's it. No one's speaking ill of From, but the issue is I find that very few people are speaking about From full stop. So
yeah.
I it makes me laugh. I love telling people when people say, what are you watching? I love saying From, and people say, what's that?
Is that an executive show?
No one's heard of it. Yeah. Is that Bosch? And no one's heard of From, but From is in its, if you're in Australia, it's had its second season on, or wherever you are in the world, it's had its second season, but in Australia it's on Stan. And, it says from the producers of Lost. I don't know if it's a producer, I don't know which producer, and it's got Harold Perrineau, who was one of the leads on Lost, but I believe from memory was sort of either written out of the show or kind of underwritten. I think I've read things saying that he was sort of frustrated with how his character was dealt with.
I heard him talking on the Brett Goldstein podcast, which is Brett Goldstein's the guy from Ted Lasso, which the conversation that Mark and I were having just before the podcast started, which I'm trying not to regurgitate. But I heard him on that, and he was actually, was it even on that? Or maybe it was just as part of the piece that was written from, what's her name, who wrote the damning expose about the production of Lost?
Yes.
I can't remember. I read that and listened to the podcast roughly at about the same time. But it sort of sounds to me like he enjoyed his time on the program, but he was fairly vocal that his character wasn't really being used in the right way and that it was maybe a little bit racist the way that his character had been sort of treated. They didn't really care for that so much, and he more or less got pushed out of the program.
Right, okay. Well, he's front and center of this one. And I think the fact that it is a producer or producers of Lost, I think what's interesting, because I loved Lost, but like many people, was frustrated by the, oh, they don't know how to land this plane. And, you know, no pun intended, because obviously that's the whole problem.
Nobody could land a plane in that show.
Exactly, that's the whole show existed. But and so my understanding of From is that the creators, the showrunners, the producers, they do know where the show is going. I think that's my understanding, is that they have a sense of that. That's also what excites me about Severance. I loved season one of Severance on Apple. And I think, again, that's a show where they know everything is there for a reason. That is, it's not just going to be a show where you go, oh, that's weird. Because Lost became that. It was just like, oh, I wonder why that happened. And then there was no resolution. So I'm a little bit more optimistic of a resolution from From. But I haven't even said what From's about. Long story short, From is it's set in a small town where from time to time people will drive into this town. They'll drive through it. And as they leave, they find that the road leads them back to this town. And they cannot leave this town. The road is, it's almost like there's like a loop. They're sort of, they're basically, people get trapped in this town. Sometimes it might be a bus of people. Sometimes it might just be an individual family arrives in their car and they get stuck. And in this small town, you have at night, everyone has to get indoors. They have to lock the doors. They have to pull the blinds down because there are these human looking creatures that are walking around at night, trying to lure people to their deaths. And so it's got a supernatural element to it and a horror element to it. And what I love about the horror is that it is quite graphic, but used sparingly. It's not every episode that you see someone completely, eaten alive and destroyed. It might be every couple of episodes. And so I think that they do that really well, that they don't lean too heavily on the horror. And so when it does happen, it's actually probably more startling because it's not happening every single episode. So I'm really into that, and it's a strong ensemble, and I like the mystery of it, and I really hope that they do have a resolution for this sometime in the next 4 years, because I'll be. If I go down that, if it turns out to be another Lost, I'll be very pissed off.
Yeah, look, this is a show where the creator of it wasn't like a Lost person. But if you go through the credits, you'll see a few people that were sort of Lost related. If you're missing Lost, this absolutely tickles the exact same sort of Lost pleasures, I guess, sort of running through it. But it's maybe a bit more sort of horror orientated than Lost was, which sort of leaned a bit more sci-fi. Yes. Would probably be the differential. I don't know. But it's good TV. It's really thrilling. It's interesting. It's strong, engaging TV. I haven't seen more than the first couple of episodes, and I fear that it's because of people like me. The show is not going to make it through to season four. I'm not too sure. It just feels like a show that no one's talking about. So I don't quite know what the future is for the show.
Oh, I mean, and isn't it terrible when you do get invested in a show that doesn't like there was a show, I think it was a CBS show. It would have been about close to a decade ago now. Called The Family. I think it starred Joan Allen. And it was about a missing kid. And I was absolutely captivated by that show. And the final episode ended on a brilliant cliffhanger and they cancelled it. Same thing happened when I was a kid. There was a show called Earth 2. I was hooked on Earth 2. And then ended on a cliffhanger, cancelled. I just can't have another Earth 2 or The Family. I've suffered enough.
I feel that the great tragedy of Earth 2, or really the great tragedy of Mark Humphrey's young child watching Earth 2, was that that show, I'm pretty sure, had already been cancelled before they started playing it here. So
I think that
just,
is true. Yeah.
You know, like, fair enough, Fox. You didn't know you were going to cancel it when you started playing it, but Channel 10 knew what they were doing. They were leading you towards that.
Bastards. And look, did we ever find out why Kyle Chandler was receiving tomorrow's newspaper today? Like, that's for the early edition fans out there. Do we know, did that ever get resolved, how he came to be receiving tomorrow's newspaper? I don't know. I'd like an answer.
I'm not sure I wanted to know. Just let the cat deliver the paper. That's fine. That's all we need to know.
Oh, dearie me. Mercy. That is a deep cut. But anyway, so From is quite promising, but no one's watching it other than me. I've never had a conversation with anyone about From. So please watch it so that I'll keep renewing it.
So From you can see in Australia on Stan, and in the US it's on MGM Plus.
Mm, there you go.
Which is a service that exists.
I was about to say, I didn't even know MGM Plus was a thing. So that's
You can get MGM. You can get MGM Plus in Australia. I think there's like 4 shows on the service. You can subscribe to three Amazon Prime.
Because you're so influential, Dan, can I put in a request? I'd just like to say I would like to be able to see The Reckoning. BBC has the Steve Coogan-led Jimmy Savile miniseries, The Reckoning. I'm not going to do a VPN and get iPlayer. Don't ask me to. So my request is, could the ABC or one of the streamers please buy the rights to The Reckoning, because I would like to watch that. Thank you very much.
I think I have an answer for you, but I'm not sure I'm allowed to say. So read into that what you will.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you offline. The other thing I'd just like to put in a quick plug for, loved The Backside of Television on Binge, Mitch McTaggart's second season, doing sort of insanely deep dives into various incidents and moments of Australian TV history. He's done a lot of research, put a lot of work into it. And it's also funny. And for TV nerds, it's a goldmine. I really loved The Backside of Television.
It kills me how much attention Gogglebox gets in this country when The Backside of Television exists.
Yes, exactly right. And since I promised that I would give another compliment to the Always Be Watching newsletter, I would also like to say that in addition to the Doctor Who jokes about how Doctor Who is a children's program.
I mean, I don't know what's a joke about that, because it is, but sure, go on.
I love any story about Nicole Kidman appearing in a TV show and you referring to her as a noted big screen enthusiast or noted cinema enthusiast, Nicole Kidman, and then undercutting it by saying whatever TV show she's doing.
There is nothing funnier to me than the fact that she is currently the face of AMC's big, you know, hang out in the cinema campaign. A campaign we don't get here in Australia, because we don't have AMC cinemas, but I just love that if you go and see a movie in an AMC theater, you're going to see Nicole Kidman celebrating how much she loves being in a movie. And when was the last time we saw her in a movie? Because she gets announced to star in a whole bunch of TV shows. This morning, it announced
Far that her production
company is making Far Away Downs, the movie now being cut into a TV program. But she's just announced like another show she's producing. Like, it's just, she loves TV. Just fucking own it, Nicole Kidman. Jeez. You're welcome here.
That's it. Okay. Well, love it. Nicole, yes. we'll leave it there with our message for Nicole.
Will she do my podcast?
Oh, sure. Why not? I'll
tell her we only talk about movies here, and that maybe she'll.
Yeah, exactly. Stop on by. That gets her every time. Okay. All right. Well, okay, anything else you want to do? I think that
might be on the podcast. Mark, do you want to tell us about any projects you might be involved in?
Well, I'm about to go on tour, so if you are in Australia and would be interested in seeing me live, the War on 2023 annual comedy gala is coming to a city near you, unless you live in the Northern Territory. We will be coming around in November, December with a live satirical year in review with Charles Firth from The Chaser, James Schleffel from The Shovel, and musical comedian Gabby Bolt. I will be appearing on Question Everything on the ABC in 2 weeks, and I'll be popping up on a couple of other ABC programs, most likely to plug the tour that I just mentioned.
Fantastic. I do find it somewhat concerning that you have been, I'm not going to use the word unemployed, because that's not really true. You've got stuff happening, but you haven't had your regular TV gig for a little while, and yet you haven't launched a podcast right off the back of that. I thought you were legally required to immediately go, I've chosen to leave the program to concentrate on my podcast. I thought that's what you do now.
Well, I'd be lying if I said that I hadn't thought of it. So it's certainly the temptation is certainly strong. So I think that's inevitable. I think at a certain point, I think at the very least, I will record a pilot just for myself and just whether it, and then make a decision whether or not to go further. But I do love podcasts. So, and you know what? Why not? Why not? Why not? Seriously, why not?
Look, exactly. I mean,
you've got podcasts as much as the next person.
Maybe more so.
Thank you.
No.
Thank you.
No, exactly. No, that's not true. Podcasts are an egalitarian format. I love that anybody can launch a podcast, but not everybody has to have a podcast that people listen to.
Yeah, exactly. I just think you got to make the thing that you want, you would like to listen to. And if other people would like to listen to that too, fantastic. But no, I won't be chasing. I won't be chasing ratings. I'll be chasing obscurity, nicheness.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to being one of your five listeners. I think it's going to be an exciting time to be a podcast listener. But anyway, folks, we've got to get out of here. This is the end of screen watching. You can find my newsletter. It's called Always Be Watching. That's at alwaysbewatching.com. Comes out every day. It's weekdays usually. And then at the end of the week, a little guide to what you could watch on the weekend if you need that sort of prompt. Big shout out to usual screen watching podcast co-host Simon Foster. As 2 days ago, I thought he was going to be doing the podcast with me. Get a text message. Hey, Dan, I'm currently in China. Won't be doing the podcast with you. What's that about? Don't know. Anyway, he may be kidnapped. I may need to go to the embassy. Not too sure. We'll cover that in next week's podcast, I guess. Folks, this
is a cliffhanger. Don't cancel this podcast. Do not cancel this podcast. We need a resolution to the Simon Foster story.
This is the end of the podcast.
No, come on.
Never coming back.
Renew it. No. One more season. No.
Maybe we can do a movie. Okay, folks, this has been screen watching. We'll be back next week. Or will we? Who knows?